Indeed, and our special guest now, of course, Chase Kletsky, will stay with us as we will talk about various UFO issues that she's working on, investigating, and then we'll get to your phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. And by the way, they just notified me 99 people ago, 40,000 members of ParanormalDate.com. So jump on board if you haven't signed up yet. It's free to sign up. ParanormalDate.com. That's kind of a fun thing, Chase, for people who are trying to meet other people.
I think so. We all like to find people that we have passions in common. I think it's wonderful. I've been married for 30 years, but if I was single, I'd look for my next mate.
Nothing worse than meeting someone and you have nothing in common.
Exactly.
It's just not fun. Let's talk about some of the UFO cases you're looking at these days. What's out there?
There is so much out there right now. Mostly I'm involved with international cases, and that has a lot to do with MUFON, working the International Star Team CAG, which is the case assistant group, and just really helping all over the world and trying to investigate cases and get information and help people that have seen things that are not supposed to exist.
Well, it's nothing like it. I mean, I love this entire field. Just got interviewed by the History Channel. They're doing 16 new episodes, Chase,
on
ancient aliens. And we talked about all kinds of things that are out there. And it's truly remarkable what has happened over the years on this planet.
Yes, absolutely.
When you investigate your UFO reports, and tell me, how did you get into this? I mean, because your background is somewhat military, isn't it?
It is. I was in active duty. I worked for the Department of Defense, but my husband's active duty. My children are all active duty. So it's a lifestyle that we've had. My husband's been in service for 30 years. So it's something that's very embedded. But working for the Department of Defense, it was just strange. I've always been interested in the whole UFO phenomena and even paranormal. I've done paranormal investigations as well as cryptids, the unknown biological creatures and the monsters, as we like to say. I've been in the swamps of Louisiana. I've been in the caves in North Carolina. I've been in the coal mines of Kentucky. So if you don't know what it is, I'll kind of be the girl that raises a hand to say, I'll go look. But UFOs
Ms.
are
Tuffy.
Definitely my passion and forte. And it's changed. The field is advanced as field investigators. We've honed our skills. We're using forensic tooling and proper investigation methods. And we're really making a big difference, big difference.
Favorite paranormal story of all time, what would that be?
My favorite paranormal story is about... it would have to be one of the older ladies that had recently lost her husband. She was married for 64 years.
Oh, my.
Yes, and this is in Tennessee. And she was devastated because she was scared and very frightened at night when she'd sit down at the end of the day to watch television. You know, she had this very uneasy feeling, and she just couldn't believe her husband would do that to her. She was angry because why would he scare her? And she just knew, she felt the presence. And of course, you know, my first thought was that she was just lonely and, you know, and being alone for the first time after that many years of marriage, was new to her and it was an adjustment. But I brought all my equipment and we set up and did a full investigation. But George, it didn't take long to know exactly what happened. She had purchased a new house and had this great big double refrigerator in the kitchen next to this brand new piping, and the couch that she would watch television on sat right behind it. So I took my tri-field meter, and sure enough, the EMF coming off it was huge. And she also reported it when she slept at night in her bed, that she would feel very uneasy and know that, you know, just very paranoid and uneasy. She really felt like somebody was watching her at the end of the bed. And we go in there, and of course, she was in her 80s and had lots of medical equipment and the old analog clock. What we ended up doing was completing a full investigation, but I pretty much knew what was going on. So after we reviewed the evidence, and sure enough, we found nothing, we went back and I told her that I believed that she had a fear cage in the two places that she sat to relax. And those were the places where she felt it. That if we could help her move the furniture, and, you know, we bought her the long plugs where you could put many plugs in at a time and rearrange some of the equipment. And she called about a week later and said that her home was peaceful again, and that she was so thankful to know that her husband was, you know, not coming back and pulling a stunt and scaring her, but that she could be at peace and she could sleep for the first time since he's passed away. Now, that's what we do, George. That is the best.
I love that.
It's about the people and helping them through a process, whether it's real or perceived, of dealing with these types of anomalies that you just can't dial 911.
Are we getting more or less, Chase, strong UFO reports?
I believe we're getting more, and I think it's kind of leveled off in the past couple of years. But this is a story that's not going away. It's been, especially in modernity, UFO reports come in daily, monthly. MUFON alone will take 900 to 1,100 reports a month. And that's just one database. There are several others. So this is sincerely a big story. It's a burgeoning phenomenon. I do believe that as a UFO investigator, I investigate two types of UFOs, ours and theirs. It's a very difficult investigation to become involved in because we're dealing with a lot of things, you know, government technologies, we're dealing with unknown objects. So it's something that it's not for the weak of heart, definitely.
In terms of abduction cases and stories, do you handle many of those?
I don't do a lot of abductions. I have done a couple. And the reason I don't do abduction cases long-term is because I really believe it's a special population, and I believe they require better specialized professional attention than I can give them. You know, I'm boots on the ground, I'm nuts and bolts,
yeah.
And, you know, I collect data. You know, my job is to collect facts and canvas and, you know, grab evidence, and the abduction community, they have a different parameter for an investigation. So I like to you know, send them to specialists like, you know, Yvonne Smith or Barbara Lamb, Kathleen Martin, people that have a very high reputation out here, but they specialize in this group.
Chase, there's no question that this field, I think, has got widespread interest. We're going to open up the phone lines right now, and beyond just UFO questions and stories, if you have a paranormal story you want to share with us, go ahead. We're with Chase Kletsky, of course, and you have come on the scene, and a lot of people have noticed you. What did you do?
I don't know. I think, honestly, it's, you know, I just work. I really do just work, and I think I'm so busy with my own yard, I don't notice if the grass is greener anywhere else. That's the best way to put it. I take corners on two wheels. I love what I do. I'm very passionate and tenacious when I get out in the field. But I also believe we don't solve cases on the phone. You have to get in your car, get some equipment, make an investment in your trade, and continue to hone in your skills. I constantly am reviewing and looking for information on how to be a better forensic investigator, how to collect evidence, the proper protocols, trying to stay on top of things like this, and of course, interviewing skills. You're brilliant and have lots of experience, but it's something, it's not easy, George, to do what you do. You make it look easy, but in reality, the interview process is probably, you know, the one thing I spend the most time trying to perfect.
Sure thing.
Because that's when we get our information.
Let's go to some of the phones. This hour is going by very fast. First time caller Ronald is truck driving in Mobile, Alabama. Hi, Ronald.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, I'm a true believer of UFOs because when I was 15 years old, I'm 65 now. When I was 15 years old, my mother and brother saw a UFO, and they wouldn't lie to me, so I trusted their what they saw. And anyway, my question is, getting back to the Star Child skull, why wouldn't the U.S. government want to do the DNA thing that?
That's a good question, Ron. That's a great question. We touched on it a little bit with Melanie last hour, but Chase, nobody's running to knock down the door to do some DNA on this.
Exactly, and it's first of all, it's expensive, and anytime you're using lab equipment, we have a great lab analysis and a very professional lab in North Carolina that does a lot of our electron microscopic work. But every time they turn on those machines, it costs them money. It's out of their pocket. And I always appreciate that they don't charge me a lot of the time. We haven't found that with DNA. So the process is expensive. I think that's one reason. And the second is, you know, there's such a stigma on the just working on anything UFO related or alien, which is why my approach going to the scientists now is, hey, we have this anomalous skull. What do you think it is? Instead of going to them immediately saying, hey, we think this is an alien star child. I think the approach has changed, but I think the field is opening up. And to answer the caller's question about the government, I believe that the government can't touch the skull because they're not interested in UFOs, right? The government doesn't believe, they deny any knowledge of extraterrestrials or UFOs. So to be interested in even coming to the Star Child, it's probably something that, you know, a handler somewhere would say, not a good idea.
Not a good idea at all. That's probably the best idea.
Right, right. It would be wonderful, but, you know, there's a part of us out here in the community, the UFO community, and, you know, I'm not sure I would trust them anyway. I wouldn't trust what they told me at the end. I would rather this skull be maintained in an independent arena for any testing and to have somebody behind it, you know, that you could trust. It has to be dispassionate. So I just don't think I trust them anyway, so I'm glad they don't want it.
Let's go to Santa Cruz, California. Mark's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks
Hi.
For taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I'm calling from Santa Cruz Mountains up here. We got a little Big Stick Museum. And some buddies of mine were out the other day, about 2 weeks ago. One of them has one of those drones.
Aha.
Flying the drone around, looking up at these, you know, seeing how high the top of the redwood trees, about 300 feet or so. And it's about four or five of us, and we're looking up. As we're watching the thing get up there towards the top of the trees, all of a sudden noticed the sun was starting to set. It was about a half hour before sunset. And I noticed a metallic reflection. And it was kind of a sphere-looking thing. And it was probably, we also get a lot of air traffic coming into the Bay Area. I would guess somewhere around 20,000 feet. But it was perfectly still. And all of us, you know, we kind of looked at it, and it was like, what is that? It wasn't moving at all. It, for references, you know, we had a grove of trees that we could reference from, and it was a really strange feeling, seeing something that you didn't know what it was. It was completely silent, and it maintained the same position, didn't drift or move like you'd expect a satellite or a weather balloon or something. It just stayed in the same spot. And it stayed there till the sun went down, and it just disappeared.
Hmm.
So that was the other thing. It didn't, you know, it wasn't a star. It didn't illuminate after the sun had set. It was just catching the last of the sun rays as it was setting and reflecting down. So, yeah, my first UFO to see.
It was exciting, wasn't it?
It was a bit exciting. It was interesting. You know, all of us were just kind of like, wow, it's not really that big of a deal. We're not being invaded. It's just there.
Not yet, anyway.
Right.
Which brings up an interesting question, Chase. like Independence Day, do you think they will ever try to take us over?
I wonder about this often. I don't think so. Or at least that's not going to be our disclosure. I do believe that if they're going to make their presence known, it's going to be in a way that everyone will understand that this is a big deal and that everybody's going to see it at once type of contact. I don't think it's just going to be one little ship parking in Central Park. I believe that it would be something to station like that. Do I believe they're going to invade? Gosh, I hope not, but there is absolutely no evidence to say they won't either. The reason I don't think so is because they could have 100 times. You know, obviously, if they have the technology, they could have done it by now. I don't know what the reason would be to do it 5 years from now versus 5 years ago. But again, you know, we're, you know, trying to break through a lot of this information. And I think if you talk to most ufologists, and George, you may agree with this, but yeah, we believe we solved. Are UFOs real? Yes, absolutely. We did that 10 years ago. Do we believe that UFOs and occupants, pilots, extraterrestrials are interacting with humanity? Yes, we kind of, you know, have enough evidence. We meet a burden of proof. This is something that we feel is solved. What we're looking at now is exactly who are they and what do they want? Those are the questions that I know my colleagues in the field, that's what we're looking into now. The caller talked about the sphere that he saw. Epidemic. We've been hearing about those since Foo Fighters, you know, the balls of light. We hear orange orbs. We've been hearing orange orbs since, you know, the 1800s, ever since we had print. Many, many people looking into that. Silver balls, silver spheres. You know, these we call lights in the sky. They're probably the most difficult to investigate because it's a light in the sky, and most investigators are there after a fact. So it's just really very interesting.
Well, lights in the sky, of course, are one thing. Seeing texture to the craft and maybe occupants through windows, that's something else, Chase, isn't it?
Absolutely, and we have plenty of those. And, you know, I think the listeners, you know, I like to remind people when we're talking about UFOs that, you know, remember our astronauts are talking about things they've seen. The cosmonaut, Marina Popovich, reported probably 3,000 UFO stories from her colleagues.
I know.
You know, things out of Russia. She was a Russian cosmonaut.
Just let's talk a little bit about that and some more. We'll take final calls in a moment. We are talking demons tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, followed by those special open lines, so make sure you're part of the program. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Chase Kletsky with us. Chase, you were talking about the Russian cosmonaut. Fill us in on that story.
She was amazing pioneer of her day, but as a cosmonaut, Marina literally came out, and this was even with, you know, KGB, and she didn't really speak until she was out of the country, but she talked about many UFO stories that she heard throughout her career and also the things that she personally had seen herself. She was a maverick, a test pilot, and of course, this is, you know, back in the day, right? So it was amazing, these trailblazers, and even our own astronauts coming out and speaking, and you know, just pilots, military personnel, police officers, but we can't dismiss the, you know, little grandmom, you know, in a rural town in Kentucky that wouldn't lie to save her life. So these are our typical witnesses. And I think if the general public knew exactly who we were talking to and the credibility of these people, there'd be a better understanding of why I could be so blatant to say we have a UFO phenomena absolutely happening on Earth.
You know, when you're doing this, you're enjoying this, aren't you?
I love it. Yes, I really do.
Well, I got to tell you, it's got its rewards. You're not going to get rich doing it, Chase, but it's got its rewards.
It really has rewards. And most of it is the people and being involved in something that is so mysterious. And to be out in the trenches, I often tell the stories when we would be Bigfoot hunting and you're with just a few friends and everybody's quiet and you're listening, you know, for signs and sounds, and you hear a twig break. Well, you know it's probably a raccoon, right, George? But your heart pounds and everybody's like, what was that? You know, there are moments that when you're with a group of people or you're out there by yourself really looking for things that are unanswered but are very real going on today, there's such a satisfaction, even in the journey.
Well, sure is. Let's take some final calls here for you, Chase. Let us go next to Van Buren, Arkansas. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling. Good morning to you.
Hi, George. How are you doing today?
Good, Chris. Thank you.
Hi, Chase. I heard you say something earlier about investigating cryptids, and it kind of brought to my mind the old urban legend, and I'm not really sure how sold I am on it being an urban legend of the black-eyed children. And I've heard a lot of speculation that they could possibly be technology that the aliens have possibly used our DNA, abducted people, and formed them into hybrids that could meld and assimilate to our society and, I guess, either spy or just check up on us. Or
take us over.
They seem pretty nefarious. So I was kind of wondering if you've come across any possible examples of them being real.
I have not personally investigated any sightings of the black-eyed children.
That's David Weatherly's boy.
Yes, one of my favorite researchers out here, because he's another one that actually puts boots to the ground and doesn't investigate from a phone. I love David, and he's definitely got a lot of great information. However, we are hearing more about black-eyed adults, and of course, David Jacobs' new book, and he has a theory of and abductees telling him how they're transitioning hybrids that are very, very human-looking into society, and we wonder if the black-eyed children were not part of this process, because we had a lot of reports of black-eyed children 10 years ago. And now, you know, they're adults. We're getting a lot more reports. And I say we, meaning us as a community and not me personally. David Weatherly really is somebody to look up on the website. But the black-eyed children is a growing phenomenon.
Scary, and don't let them in, Chase.
Absolutely. That is one thing we often get asked, what do we wish? Out of all the things that we investigate, what do we most hope is not true, and mine is the black-eyed children.
We do not want them in by any means. Scary. David Politis, by the way, is going to be my guest next week. He's written stories on people disappearing in our national parks.
Yes.
Just gone, vanished.
Poof. Over 200 a year on an average. And, you know, with the missing statistics that we have, that's not as shocking as it should be until you break it down to how many a month just in our national forest. Then it's shocking. When you do the math of breaking that down, you're like, oh my gosh, it's like, you know, 10 people a month. What?
Let's go to John in Cincinnati, first time caller. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Well, I hope I'm not too far off, you know.
Well, let's give it a try.
All right. Yeah. Anyways, I was just going to say that, you know, in the last 10 years, I've had two family members pass away. And I know you've had a couple guests on to talk about, you know, how everything's connected and stuff like that in the universe. Like, pretty much we're all one or everything's connected. But basically, I found my cousin as he was taking his last four breaths. He actually overdosed, you know, on some medication. And not even within 12 to 18 hours after he passed, you know, I had saw him in my dream. He came to me, you know, said, you know, everything's all right. I just want to let you know it was an accident, you know, this and that. And, but what was weird about that case was, talked to my girlfriend about 6 a.m. that morning, said, you know, I'm going to go over and wake my cousin up, probably about 8. We might go outside and play some basketball. Well, I went over there, 8 o'clock. That's when I found him as he was, you know, taking his last couple breaths. Not even as soon as I walked over to my house, I received a phone call from her, from my girlfriend. She's like, oh, I don't know. I just got this really bad feeling in my stomach. I went to call you. She's like, I felt like something terrible happened. And I'm like, my cousin just passed away, you know. And she was like, oh, that's, you know, that's crazy because I was just getting this real bad feeling. I feel like I needed to call you. And we had been dating since we were 12 years old. You know what I mean?
Oh, so sure. So you're connected. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the same thing happened with my father 3 years ago. Walk in the house, go upstairs. He already had passed. And by the time I called 911, they showed up. I walked downstairs. And she was living at her mom's at the time. She had called me like, hey, I just wanted to call you, see how everything was doing. I had this bad feeling like, you know, when your cousin died. And I told her about my dad. And, you know, it's just like, it kind of all makes sense. I just want to, you know, get your input on that. Maybe I didn't know if your guest had any, you know, knowledge about anything like that.
Chase, have you had any experiences with that kind of paranormal activity?
I have.
Or I should say supernatural activity, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, we basically refer to that as high strangeness or synchronicities. And they're just things that happen in our life that take us out of the traffic jams and, you know, our normal routines. And I would like to say and like to think that it's a reminder that this universe offers so much more than we're paying attention to. And they're just reminders. It's almost like we're so distracted and treated in a dumbed down situation. And we have all these things that we can explore, like your connections and like you having knowledge or feelings of things that are coming. There's so many different avenues to that and experiences and a journey that you can take further. But where does that come from? Where do, you know, psychic abilities and, you know, people that have talents above, you know, normal, where does that come from? And I have to believe that, you know, we're much bigger than we're made to believe and taught to live in.
Let's go to our international line. It's John in Ontario. Hey, John.
How are you, George?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm feeling not too bad.
Good.
This is Bartholomew.
That's right. That's what I called you.
And hello, Chase.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention, if I can get a couple of things in here. I've been involved with UFOs as far back as I can remember. And the one time, I was with my mother in the car. My father drank a bit, so we just wanted to get out and go somewhere quiet. And this huge thing come down, and it just blocked up the whole sky. Over a power transformer, huge one, and you could see like this wave of whitish blue, like a very, very light blue, going up to the ship. All the lights all around is dimmed. And, but anyway, I wanted to get out. My mother, she hung on to me like crazy and wouldn't let me get out. And, I was abducted by the Nordic type.
Yeah.
And they, the two that I met, I gathered they were the leaders because of what they were showing me. They couldn't be more kind. They were very understanding. They spoke to you through your mind. And he was a little over 7 foot tall. She was just under, well, I guess, say 7 feet, and he was about 7'4". And they showed me how all these ships that they had were powered. And when he showed me, I thought, when man, if they do finally discover this, how to build this thing, they won't believe how easy it is. And you can use it for any kind of fuel. But I phoned to George about the little creature with the double set of teeth and the claws. Yeah.
That was a weird one.
Yeah. And I've mentioned about our house being haunted. And about a week and a half ago, I was just in the bathroom rinsing off my face. And all of a sudden, I got the unbelievable burning down just below my calf. And it was about, well, it was as big as my calf. And so I quick dried off real quick. And I looked down, and it's like if you have one of the old razor blades, you know, and you break it in half,
yeah.
Or even if you didn't, I had 40 to 50 of these little slits.
You're kidding me.
No, and it was bang, just like that. It wasn't like one, two, three.
And you didn't get out of bed. It wasn't that way, was it?
No, I was in the washroom, just rinsing my
face. Geez, that's something. Hey, we're running out of time here, but Chase... what do you do with something like that? You've got to really be a paranormal investigator with a case like that.
Yes, and to tell you the truth, the caller absolutely has hit on, you know, some of the most popular types of reports we get. We often hear of objects around power lines or even following power lines with that same effect underneath it. It's almost like that using the power from the electricity. It's kind of partnering with the ship. So we hear that often. The other thing that we hear is that many people that experience or have a UFO experience or contact are plagued with paranormal activity. A lot of that follows them,
doesn't it?
Yes.
You've never played with a Ouija board, have you?
No.
Good.
I did when I was a young teenager, and there was always something about it that I stayed away from. My gut told me to stay away, and I always have. I don't know what to think of them. I hear, you know, different sides to it, and especially when we're doing paranormal investigations. But I try to stay very science-minded, and I stick with my science tools and my collection. I don't do the Ouija boards.
That's smart. Chase, thanks for being on the program. Chase's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.